college is ending and you're not sure what to do. You don't want a desk job, you're through with food service, temporarily, and you want to go somewhere where people don't know all the misguided transgressions you may have committed over the past 4 years. College life got cushy, people drank a lot, partied a lot, including yourself, and you think it's time to give back. Your sister's friend did a program like Teach for America, but with a 1 year commitment. It's attached to the Jesuit Order of the Catholic Church. You know from your 7 years of Catholic school that the Jesuits were and are the countercultural sect of the missions. They want people to be happy and motivated. You want the same, so you sign up. You brush up on your New Testament before the phone interview. During the interview, you explain your condition as spiritual questioning. The interviewer says, "You are not the only one." You have no trouble agreeing with this. You know few atheists and few Christians. Most hover somewhere in between in a world that not only feels safe, but controlled. You know what you believe, you listen to others, and would never put them down, and hope for the same in return. In a few days, you get the call. You're hoping for Seattle or Portland, help people by day and by night, live your dream of being a true punk or grunge girl at a new venue every night, leading talks about the beauty of Kurt Cobain. The woman on the phone says, "The southeastern corner of Montana." In the pamphlet, this destination is described as only for those who can foresee themselves flourishing in a very, very small town. You grew up reading Little House on the Prairie and Anne of Green Gables. A large portion of your jaded 20-year-old heart yearns for pigtails and water buckets and biscuits. The job is teaching second grade on an Indian reservation. You're moving to Montana. Your friends envision a life for you composed of kicking it back in the res bar, maybe bringing them back some peyote, and obtaining multiple cowboy fiancés. You imagine becoming authentically mystical, running across open plains into a bright orange sunset. In August, you meet your new housemates, volunteers who will also be working at the school and sharing living space with you. There are 3 girls and 2 men. Upon first seeing them, you think, they are large, hardy people. One just graduated from Notre Dame and is aspiring to be a priest. One is a tall, severe-looking guy who keeps his hood on even indoors. One girl shares within the first few hours of meeting that she hates all animals. Your new home, Ashland, Montana, is a town of 200 people, a 2-hour drive from the closest city, Billings, the city with the highest meth addiction in the country. Ashland has a video store in someone's living room, a bank, a post office, a cafe, a small store, and 2 bars in which workers of the school are not permitted to enter. It's in the contract. The volunteers share a split house with a priest who is a foreigner. His bedroom is directly below yours. You think of all the implications involved in this setup. You go to church on Sundays because there's little else to do and because you want to meet people. You see religion working for the children. They need it to know someone somewhere loves them and is taking care of them. You do your best to take care of them. One weekend, you and a couple of your housemates drive an hour to the next town to get a beer. You drink amongst the taxidermy and feel that bit of Western life which you've been craving. When the locals at the bar talk to you, you talk to them. By midnight, as you're on your second and final beer, you've been invited to ride horses on a cattle ranch. You politely decline, knowing you're not allowed to, that you're a part of a community and not going solo tonight. It's okay, though. You know this will make a good story someday, and that feels like enough. On Monday afternoon, a housemate storms in to let you know that the entire town is saying that you're all smashed drunk over the weekend. You brush it off. You're not there to impress anyone but to serve. However, the others are upset. They begin talking about fish bowls and how you're all in one. A few days later, a dog follows you home. You give it water and some bread. It hangs around outside the house for an hour, and then you think it's gone. But you're wrong. It's there when the animal-hating housemate gets home. She charges in, screaming, "How could you do such a thing to me?" She goes on for a while. You reply shortly that you signed up to help all living things, not excluding animals, but you make a mistake and insert a curse to make your point. She shrieks and runs away as if you've hit her. After a few days of this housemate ignoring you, while at the store, she buys giant-sized portions of various meats. When you tell her pork chops seem excessive for your communal food budget, she cries and asks why you are the only one who gets special treatment. You are a vegetarian. You put your canned peaches back on the shelf. You start keeping more to yourself, trying not to get blamed for things. You meet a man, a teacher at the school, an English teacher, with all the expected nuances of being slightly disturbed and very into his drink. Two of the volunteers from the past year had actually begun dating in the house. Regardless, the housemates do not think romance belongs in a volunteer year, and they tell you about it. On the phone to friends, you joke about living in real-world Montana, red style. You take a new interest in college basketball and get invited to hang out with the non-volunteer young teacher crowd. The English teacher seems to like you too, and one night you don't go home. In the morning, you creep back to the house along the far perimeter of campus, sort of half running, half crawling, in your long black coat so as not to be sighted. But someone does see you. The housemates say nothing about your not coming home until a few days later when the gossip reaches one of them. Now they all ignore you. The regional manager of the program visits to figure out why everyone is ignoring you. You and the tall hooded guy are asked to have a guided mediation. Your fellow volunteer reveals that he felt very threatened by you talking to locals in the bar months back. He calls you a bad Catholic. He says he thought you were going to go home with five guys that night. The program director laughs, you laugh, your hooded enemy fumes and clenches his fists so you can see his knuckles turn white. In the winter, you all get into a car accident. You plead, "Oh my God," as the car rolls down a hill. The others climb from the wreckage and say, "God saved us." You look at your bleeding finger and wonder why did God want you to need stitches. Later, they explain to you that you endangered all of them by drinking beer and spending the night at a man's house. God was punishing you, and they had been stuck along for the ride. You stop spending time with them, and they complain that you're not spending time with them. You keep seeing the English teacher, but you never spend the night. At the Christmas banquet, there is a drawing, a raffle. You listen while others get baskets of soaps and shampoos. You drift away from the scene thinking about the types of indiscretions you most often daydream about, and then snap back at the sound of your name. You walk up to the front not knowing what you have won. You look at the certificate. You have won a buffalo. 2/3 of a buffalo. A few weeks later, a truck shows up with boxes of buffalo body parts, all clearly labeled and wrapped in white paper. You fill two large shelves of the spare freezer with the wrapped parts. The others eye the meat because they know you won't eat it. Sometimes you open the freezer and just look at the packages, inventorying what belongs to you and you alone. Eventually, you give it all away to neighbors. The school year is ending and no one in your house will look at or talk to you. Thinking about teaching summer school with them makes your stomach wrench. The tall hooded guy asks you during an argument if you want to take it out back and fight. You and he had gotten to a boxing match earlier in the year at the casino. You think of the irony of this. You'd cut down a Christmas tree in the backwoods together. He'd made fun of you when you thought buffalo noises at Yellowstone were an approaching bear. You'd sweat together in a sweat lodge constructed by a Cheyenne elder. And yet he, almost 7 feet tall and a proclaimed devout Catholic, wants to fight you. You are hated for not being religious enough, for not being enough of what the others want you to be. They wanted you to change, and you did, but not in their way. You vote yourself out of Reservation Real World. You leave the program 3 months early. On the day before you leave, you go into the priest's apartment to tell him, and he nods understandingly. He says that you're different from the others, and you wonder for the first time if he's heard the fights through the thin walls. He says, "You like the boys. I can tell, you like the boys. It's okay, God wants you to like boys." And that's all the validation you need.